Welcome. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And this is James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com, welcoming you back to another important episode of The New World next week, which, of course, you can find everything you need, sources, resources, audio, video, and much more at NewWorldNextWeek.com. James, it is now September 12th. And, of course, yesterday we had the 12th anniversary of the catalyzing and catastrophic events of September 11th, 2001. And you've done amazing work over the last day. We were just kind of joking about it off mic about the mass amount of work that you did. And I think, of course, folks should check out CorbettReport.com for all the interviews and things that you did and put out just today. So I think we'll begin with just a brief kind of recap and look at some of the new news stories surrounding the catalyzing catastrophic events. And we'll take it from rethink911.org. New poll finds most Americans open to alternative 9/11 theories. On the 12th anniversary of 9/11, a new national survey by the polling firm YouGov reveals that one in two Americans, that's 50%, have doubts about the government's account of 9/11. And after viewing footage of World Trade Center Building 7's collapse, 46% suspect that it was caused by a controlled demolition. The video that they show folks, which is just a sort of contextless shot of this building falling down, which anyone who's not living under a rock would look at it and go, oh, well, they blew that building up, right? Oh, is that in Vegas? And people then learn that it was Building 7 in Manhattan. Interestingly enough, James, and again, we'll provide all the links and implore folks to go spread these and do the research for themselves. Time Magazine has a piece about 9/11 Truthers Mark Anniversary, and they actually source and reference the aforementioned rethink911.org. With a billboard in Times Square and a global ad campaign, a group keeps questioning what happened 12 years ago. Another story is our friend Niall Bowie, who has a new op-edge piece on RT.com. Has questioning 9/11 become more acceptable? And I think we just showed you that it has. Interestingly enough, James, of course, there's always going to be tasteless, ridiculous things that happen. AT&T makes controversial connection to 9/11 anniversary. The company posted a Twitter photo of a hand holding up a smartphone with the screen displaying the tribute in light, the two light beams on the site of the Twin Towers, and of course were completely excoriated for it following that. Even more insane, James, and I'm not sure if you caught this one or not, Boston's Logan Airport, they sure are sorry for the drill that they ran this morning with smoke and flames on 9/11/13. And the last interesting note, James, I find is that it's Assad's birthday today, which I think is just an odd little note, as all the other things that we can look at of 9/11 throughout history, of course, Chile and Operation Khan, all those things, on and on and on, James. So please.
Absolutely. Well, we don't really, I think those of us in the alternative media don't need a poll to tell us that the majority of Americans do question 9/11, because we have seen this from our own work and from the audience that continues to grow for 9/11 truth information. And I think that really 9/11 truth, this is one of the big successes. I think we are winning. We have won to a large extent in the court of public opinion. There's still a lot of work left to do, so I absolutely applaud the efforts of rethink911.org and all of these other organizations that are continuing to press the issue. But by and large, I think the momentum is on our side, and more people than ever before, at the very least, are looking at new events as they come along, like this Syria chemical weapons attack or the Boston Marathon bombing or what have you, and starting to immediately question the official government narratives as they're coming out. So there really has been a shift in public discourse over the last 12 years, and a lot of that can be attributed to the 9/11 truth movement. That's one of the successes we have to celebrate. As I say, obviously, still a lot of work left to do, and as people who have been watching my 9/11 anniversary coverage will know, one of the things that I'm pressing for is to try to move beyond some of the sound bites and regurgitated facts that we've been hearing for the last 12 years, and towards identifying the actual suspects that we could actually prosecute for the crimes of 9/11, which has to be the other main goal of 9/11 truth. And I've been getting a lot of comments from people asking, well, how do we do anything about this? What can we do about it? Well, I briefly touched on that in my interview on Traces of Reality Radio with Guillermo Jimenez yesterday on RBN, so people can go and listen to that conversation at the end where I talk a little bit about that. I'll also be talking about that in the next Questions for Corbett, which will be coming out this Friday. Instead of the podcast, I am completely and utterly exhausted from my Syria coverage and 9/11 coverage, so I don't think I'm going to put a regular podcast out this weekend. Instead, I'll just do a questions for Corbett and take some of those questions off the table and talk specifically about what people can do to bring the 9/11 criminals to justice.
I think a lot of it too, and I really found myself thinking about that a lot too, the sort of just all the regurgitated facts that anyone who's been involved in 9/11 research over these last 12 years, as I guess the years have now gone by so much that I almost stop and have to remember, it's like, oh, I've been thinking about this for 12 years now. I feel like, James, it's in a way, this is maybe the first year that it hasn't been a huge dark cloud over my head in a way. And I feel like I'd like to think it's because I learned about 9/11, I took the lessons to heart, and I've tried to apply them to my life. And so, in a way, I don't feel like I have to kind of regurgitate stuff every year and trot out the same old sort of tired memes and tropes. Ultimately, I think that's what it's all about, is you have to live the truth. And whether 9/11 truth led you to food truth or economic truth, you have to live that in your life, and it can't just be a 9/11 was an inside job slogan.
Exactly right. And just on that note, I think you're right that that 9/11 has become less of a politically relevant thing as it's less and less used as the explicit justification for the tyranny we see going on around us. Of course, it's always in the background there, but as it fades in political relevance, I think there's also the opportunity there as those wounds start to heal over, that it's less of an emotionally raw thing that will incite people's just base instincts. So I think we can actually reach out to people who would have been resistant to this in the past, and that's another opportunity for 9/11 truth moving forward.
Having said that, James, let's move to our second story this week, which is an interesting one. And I referenced that, of course, 9/11 is Bashar al-Assad's birthday. Last month, The Onion, as they are so expert at doing, cut right to the heart of the matter and bust out really interesting, you know, jaw-droppingly funny, but right on the money social commentary sometimes. They purported to have an op-ed piece from Bashar al-Assad last month that it basically said, so what's it going to be? And we'll include that link where basically Assad laid out the fact that America has zero options in dealing with Syria and saying, so what's it going to be? However, it's not satire, James. It is the truth. It was all over the talking head news in the evening hours today. A plea for caution from Russia. That's right. Russian President Vladimir Putin wrote an op-ed that was in the New York Times print edition for 9/11/2013, and I'll just read some of that briefly for you. Recent events surrounding Syria have prompted me to speak directly to the American people and their political leaders. It's important to do so at a time of insufficient communication between our societies. A new opportunity to avoid military action has emerged in the past few days. The United States, Russia, and all members of the international community must take advantage of the Syrian government's willingness to place its chemical arsenal under international control for subsequent destruction. Judging by the statements of President Obama, the United States sees this as an alternative to military action. In closing, and again, I implore you to read the entire thing. I'm just giving you a beginning, middle, and end. My working and personal relationship with President Obama is marked by growing trust. I appreciate this. I carefully studied his address to the nation on Tuesday, and I would rather disagree with a case he made on American exceptionalism, stating that the United States policy is what makes America different. It's what makes us exceptional. It is extremely dangerous to encourage people to see themselves as exceptional, whatever the motivation. There are big countries and small countries, rich and poor, those with long democratic traditions, and those still finding their way to democracy. Their policies differ too. We are all different, but when we ask for the Lord's blessings, we must not forget that God created us all. So writes Vladimir Putin in the New York Times op-ed. James, this was new news to you. What's your take on it?
What a masterstroke of geopolitical genius here from Putin. I have to give to take my hats off to this, because this is the type of thing which, if anything, will ever humanize the Russians to the average American, rather than just those inhuman animals that we have to remember are kind of the enemy, although they're not explicitly the enemy, but we have to keep them in check. If there's anything that can actually humanize them, it's something like this, cutting through all the diplomatic crap, all of the media meetings behind closed doors between leaders who claim to represent us who do nothing of the sort, and going directly to the American people and saying, look, this is the situation. And on this issue, the vast majority of the American people agree with him. So this is, I mean, this is truly, I think, a game-changing event in terms of international relations. And it's the kind of thing that I'd like to see happening more often, not only from Putin to the Americans, but between nations, rather than having these leaders meeting in these top-level conferences. And I hope people do go and read through this the entire thing. He really does an excellent job of laying this out in ways that will appeal, I think, to the majority of Americans, invoking God and things like this, but also laying out, I think, a very good case for why, specifically, why the military intervention is a bad idea that's doomed to fail. And he says, for example, a strike would increase violence and unleash a new wave of terrorism. It could undermine multilateral efforts to resolve the Iranian nuclear program and the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and further destabilize the Middle East and North Africa. It could control throw the entire system of international law and order out of balance. I mean, he frames all of this in the type of language of international relations and the UN supremacy and all of that, which I'm obviously uncomfortable with. But having said all of that, he's exactly right. And I don't think anyone can really dispute that the Syria strike would completely destabilize the region, could threaten to spill the entire region into conflict, would create a new wave of terrorism. I mean, all of these points, which intuitively the American public knows, that's why this war is the least popular war ever proposed in the history of the United States, and why I don't see how Obama can go ahead with a unilateral strike at this point and save any of his political face. So again, masterstroke of geopolitical genius, I think, coming from Putin, and just the right thing at just the right time. And I mean, can you imagine something like this having taken place during the Cold War, a direct address from the Soviet leader to the American public or something? I mean, it's truly, I think, a game-changing event.
It is. You, I think, hit it right on the head. And I think it shows that someone like Putin has been on the grand chessboard a lot longer than Obama, and he pretty much hands him his hat on this case. So, James, you called it. You said game changer. That takes us to our third and final story this week, as we always try and go out with a somewhat positive story. And we'll take it from my own foodworldorder.com. Large, huge water reserves in Kenya discovered. Recently, it's been revealed that a large aquifer has been discovered in Kenya. It's more than 300 meters underground, and there's so much water it could potentially serve Kenya's needs for 70 years. The Lodakipi Basin Aquifer was found by a project ran by UNESCO, United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, and the Kenyan government, and was funded, James, by Japan. A number of survey techniques, including radar, satellite, and geophysics, were used in order to find the water reserve, which holds more than 9 times more than the current water reserves of the country. A statement from Abu Amani of UNESCO said, quote, "I'm not saying this could solve all the problems. It could be a game changer within the country." And James will include an interesting piece from the New York Times that maybe fleshes the story out a little bit more. And I love situations like this that just, I don't know, as things look their darkest, you never know what may be discovered that can turn a whole world around and can put people in charge of their lives. And I hope this is that kind of game changer.
Must resist cynicism over potential for this to be co-opted. Yes, I genuinely hope that the people of Kenya get to benefit from this resource that's been discovered, and I genuinely hope that there is a way to do that. If so, it will be one of the few times in human history where a valuable resource and something that could benefit the population has been distributed to the population, but We'll see. And let's hope that the people of Kenya can find a way to make this happen, because, again, water is an increasingly important resource on the geopolitical chessboard, and one that I think will be taking over some of the thunder from commodities like oil in the 21st century. I think there will be water wars coming along, and we're being prepped for them right now. So this type of discovery is important, and let's hope.
Absolutely. So, James, just in closing, I want to include just a couple of extra mentions. I find it interesting. There is a little bit of an update to a story we covered on New World Next Week a few weeks ago about the eminent domain situation in California. California City has now approved eminent domain for negative equitable equity mortgages. And you can read more about that on my Twitter feed at Media Monarchy. The other thing I want to mention, James, I just did an interesting interview this morning with a guy named David Wallman, who has a book called The End of Money. It's a nice conversation. Perhaps could have been more hardcore, but I just kind of wanted to get the info and kind of converse with David Wallman and talk about the end of money. And we talked about alternative currencies and microchips and mobile ticketing for public transportation and all sorts of things. So I just want to kind of remind folks that Media Monarchy still exists as a new creation outlet, whether it's mixtapes or interviews, James.
Well, I haven't heard that interview yet, but I am looking forward to it. And once again, just on a deprogramming note from my side, there will be no podcast this weekend, but there will be a Questions for Corbett. So so I'm looking forward to getting into the mailbag and answering some of your questions out there. And I hope people will keep tuning in to MediaMonarchy.com, CyberspaceWar.com, HolyHexes.com, FoodWorldOrder.com, and your Twitter at Twitter.com/MediaMonarchy, and probably 18,000 other things that we can plug. But we'll leave it there for now. James, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Take care.